Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. On today's show, we spend the hour dealing with critical media literacy in higher education with student researchers at San Francisco State University and Project Censored affiliate professor Ken Burrows. They'll highlight their work on the news that didn't make the news while offering alternative perspectives on reimagining our world. Please stay with us. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces slaying the poor almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of just our brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got that love of just your brothers and your sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got the love of just our brothers and our sisters. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. On today's program, we again turn to critical media literacy in higher education, and we are in conversation for the hour with Ken Burrows. He's at San Francisco State University, a longtime affiliate of Project Censored, and on the board with us at the Media Freedom Foundation. And we'll also be joined by several San Francisco State University students that are contributors and research contributors to the upcoming Project Censored book, Censored 2017, in celebration of the 40th anniversary of Project Censored. So we are going to be joined again by several students in this first segment. In addition to Ken Burrows, we'll be joined by Michael Todd. We'll also be joined by Brandy Maselli. And then later in the program, we'll be joined by Daisy Iroka and Jillian Solomon. But let's start off with you, Ken Burrows. Let's talk about this process. You have an incredible gathering of students and researchers at San Francisco State University and have long contributed stories to the Censored Cycle and Censored Book, the validated independent news stories, so to speak, which are posted at projectcensored.org. So listeners can actually follow along and look at the stories that the students researched while we're on air. But Ken Burrows, talk to us a little bit about this process for you, the significance of it, and what you get out of this.
Good to be here again, Mickey. We've been doing this for, I believe it's 7, possibly 8 years as a Project Censored team on our campus. And every year it becomes a little more clear about what we're doing and I hope more effective. Every year varies, but I find it really a fascinating thing. I hope that somehow we can expand to even more campuses. Aside from the critical thinking exercise, which this is great for students to explore alternative media and find stories that vitalize classroom discussion and really help us engage and possibilities about a future that's unfolding. And if it is news that isn't really being discussed in a corporate sense, but really we're not hearing about it, it's often a surprise to half the students in the class, and there's the discussions that come out of that are extremely rich.
I want to also add, Ken Burrows, you teach holistic health studies. Mm-hmm. You have developed a fantastic holistic health center and library at San Francisco State University that's more than just an educational facility. It's really a hub where people come and talk about important issues. And so that's a really important component of this, sort of the human element, the face-to-face element that you experience with your students and help build interpersonal communication skills.
Very much. We have a library, but the library is only a part of what we call a community action center. It's the information that underlies healthy choices. How do we come to those healthy choices, and how do we engage in that? And some of this is certainly what is newsworthy for these healthy choices in our lives today and over the year that we study these stories. So this is what our community is about, is engaging in these conversations. And out of that, certainly the research that they do deepens the conversations they have with each other. And then in our weekly meetings as a Project Censored culture, there's just, again, a vitality that shows up with the ideas that each student is finding and bringing to the table.
Ken Burrows at San Francisco State, you were very active 13 years ago with a big conference that Project Censored put on there, and we began exchanging information and nominating stories back then. And of course, San Francisco was really probably officially the first campus to be the second Project Censored site, along with Mickey Huff at Dabble Valley College, was pretty close in there as well. But then we're now up to some 25 sites all over the country, and hundreds of stories and student researchers being involved. So it's really grown and expanded, and I thank you for helping us kick that off. It was a great thing.
Yeah, it was a great conference. We had some 1,200 people, if I remember right.
That was 2001, the Alternative Media Expo, spring of 2001,
yes.
I believe.
It was closer to 2000, actually, that registered.
I remember
that
was huge.
That was a big conference.
It was a huge thing.
Yeah,
it was great, and a really great sense of feeling at it. It certainly kicked up a lot of energy in our campus that's continued. So,
well, let's turn, Ken Burrows, to one of the students that you worked with at San Francisco State University. Michael Todd is with us in studio. And, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing at SFSU, how you got involved with the Project Censored Research in particular. And then we're going to jump into to one of the stories you researched that's called Audi Creates a Synthetic Diesel Fuel from Air and Water. But go ahead, tell us about yourself, Michael.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the chance to be here. I'm from the Northwest. I grew up in Oregon, and I lived in Seattle for a long time, too. I moved down to San Francisco about 3 years ago, and I'm an environmental studies major here at SF State. And my emphasis is on the urban environment, because I feel like one of the things I want to do in later life is I want to work on the way that cities and everybody uses their resources, because it's one of the biggest problems we have as a society is our resource use is just unbalanced. You know, we bring all this stuff to the city and then we just kind of waste it for the most part and we don't really use it right. And that's kind of why I got so excited about this story and decided to do it for Project Censored, was because it takes away one of the big sources of pollution in our society, which is carbon pollution, carbon dioxide released from cars, because cars are something that we all use, and they produce a lot of pollution, a lot of carbon dioxide. And it puts pressure on already existing carbon systems. We just have a carbon cycle. You know, trees, they grow, and then they die, and then they release CO2 into the atmosphere. Then that CO2 gets taken back by other plants that put it into themselves. And then when they die again, they release it back into the atmosphere. It's a cycle that's been going on for millions of years. And what we're doing is we're putting pressure on it by releasing a lot more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than plants can take out of the atmosphere. And it's causing a lot of problems with climate change. 350 parts per million is the level that we really can't go over as far as having strong changes to our climate, but we're already over 400 parts per million. And so that's one of the bigger problems that we're going to need to deal with.
It's certainly a significant challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And again, as Ken Burrows was saying, you were saying, Ken, that students maybe are unaware of some of these stories. You extrapolate from that, the larger public mm-hmm. is really unaware mm-hmm. of some of the significance of these kinds of stories. And Michael Todd, one of the stories that you researched, that you worked on, had to do with Audi creating a synthetic diesel fuel mm-hmm. from air and water. This was originally published by Gizmag. I believe it's Eric Mack. It was a story that was from actually 2015. But can you tell us a little bit about the story you researched and why was it important to you and why should people know about it?
One thing I think that's really compelling about it is its solution-based approach. You know, we've got a lot of people saying, oh, these are all these problems, but there's not a lot of real good solutions to them. And I feel like this is one of them. And so what they did was German scientists working out of Dresden, a company named Sunfire, they partnered with Audi and they figured out how to make diesel fuel out of carbon dioxide and water. And they basically reverse engineered the same process. Like when we burn stuff, we basically set the stuff on fire and it takes the carbon and then these long hydrocarbon chains, like, and they cut those apart and then that releases energy. And that's what we use to do work. And so what they did was they basically reverse engineered the process. They took CO2 and H2O, separated the carbons and the hydrogens from the oxygen, and then put the carbon with the hydrogen and made hydrocarbon chains. And then once they did that, they just refined it like oil and they made synthetic diesel out of it. And it's clean burning. There's no sulfur in any other toxic chemicals like are normally found in fossil fuels. And the best part about it is it's carbon neutral, which means that for every molecule, for every atom of carbon that you burn, it was an atom of carbon that was taken out of the air. So it doesn't unbalance the cycle. And what they do, it's a really simple process. They use renewable energy, windmills and solar power to power their heaters. And what they do is they heat steam to about 800 degrees and then they pressurize it. And that causes the hydrogen to break from the oxygen. And then they mix it with carbon dioxide and again they pressurize it and that causes the carbons and the hydrogens to come together. And they have it what they call as blue crude. And so then once they have the blue crude, they just refine it like you would normally refine fossil fuels.
And what you're saying, though, this is entirely from air and water.
Entirely from air and water. They take the carbon dioxide straight from the air.
So at this point, it's essentially experimental. They've done it in laboratories or on a small scale. Is this adaptive to global transportation needs?
It seems like it's going to be a little bit more expensive per liter than what you would normally pay for diesel fuel in Europe right now before tax. But they plan to make it scalable, and it is usable. They talked about one of the heads of Audi putting it in their car and actually using it.
Ken Burrows, let's bring you back in. You're the faculty evaluator and advisor on this. And mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about your process, of kind of how you follow the lead of students like Michael Todd and their passions and interests.
It's a great job, actually. I really enjoy it. I think one thing that's unusual with the way we orient to the stories for Project Censored is that many of our stories are constructive, such as Michael's. Almost half of our stories that we submitted this year, we submitted 22 stories, and almost half of those were constructive, solution-based, or I even prefer a term that's broader than solution, which is a generative, which I think Brandy will speak to in a moment. That solution-based speaks about specific problems that we can solve, but generative-based solutions are about really focusing on a whole different way of orienting our imaginations and our society toward thinking differently about what's causing the problems as well. So it's very preventive. So I love that so many of our stories are really very positive in tone. And yet I also find that they're often not picked as the primary stories. I noticed that we have a number of our stories appearing in the future book. They're all from the other half of our stories, which tend to be, I think, most of us, it's part of our just part of the architecture of our nervous system, that we react to threat. In biology, it's called the negativity bias. And this negativity bias is in all of us, that we have to be paying attention to the threats in the world. And those particular threats grab our attention at time. And what is left is that our imagination is often not sparked by possibilities. And generative journalism, which we'll hear about shortly, is about asking questions in such a way that we start thinking in preventive ways, not just problem-solving ways. So we're focusing, we hope, on a next cultural chapter that might really help Project Censored in a new way.
Well, that's very good, and collaboration is certainly what we're about at Project Censored. The voting selection process is quite detailed, as you know, going through some 28 judges and other participants. And so we do, however, house the stories at the projectcensored.org website year-round, and the website gets far more traffic than the annual book. And the way we see it, and Andy Roth and I see it, is we celebrate every story, every student, every campus, every affiliate. We think all the stories are significant and important, regardless of where the rankings or hierarchies in the book goes, because, as you know, Ken Burrows, it's the process and the work that goes into it and, mm-hmm. and what comes out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's a very positive process, and we're really happy to have you and your students.
We just finished up, well, probably it was our final meeting this year, and I noticed the tone of the meeting and the sense of engagement and accomplishment that students had was very different than last semester and very different than this group early in the semester. So I'd love to see it build on itself, and it's very, very empowering for students.
This is Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. I'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a brief musical break, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by another student at San Francisco State University, Brandy Maselli, and we'll continue to talk about the stories that are under consideration for the next Project Censored book. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. On today's program, we're looking at critical media literacy. We're looking at some of the Project Censored affiliates program. We're joined by Ken Burrows of San Francisco State University, who is kind enough to bring many of his students with him today to share with us the research they're doing on important underreported news stories. And also many of the stories that are put forward by students at San Francisco State University look at a positive or solutions type aspect. And before the break, we heard Ken Burrows talking about what our next topic will be, which is actually generative journalism. And we're joined now by San Francisco State University senior Brandy Maselli. So Brandy, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with the project here, and then talk to us about a couple of the stories that you've been researching, which are on the projectcensored.org website and are quite fascinating. Brandy.
Thank you. I'm definitely happy to be here, and thank you for having me. And thanks for the reason that we're here, and that's Project Censored. I've had the pleasure of working with and getting to know some awesome peers of mine. We gather every week, sometimes twice a week, to talk media literacy, and that's something that we should all be talking more about. This semester, I wrote a few stories, and one is called Generative Journalism, Catalyzing Creative Possibilities Versus Reporting Facts. And it's about the fact that most news that we hear is about what we fear: natural disasters, failures, fraud, murder, war. And this fear-based perspective is quite overwhelming, and it leaves out the vast amount of human behavior that is cooperative, caring, and mutually supportive. Axiom News coined the term generative journalism, and it speaks to that crisis that we have existing in journalism today, and it promotes society's common good. It uses narrative skills that help give birth to what's most alive and important in a community. And it often begins with a question, a proactive question, and I'll give an example that Axiom News used in Peterborough, Ontario. What if we could actually feel like co-creators, restored to creative power in the neighborhoods and communities that we live in? This reporter's question inspired members of Peterborough to create Citizenship Unleashed, a group helping people change the way they feel about their community and to get them acting on what matters.
That's fantastic. So did you know much about this generative journalism concept prior to encountering this story? Was it something that you, because I know that you're involved in journalism at SF State.
And, I certainly am. Yes? Yeah, I've been studying print and online journalism for the past 4 years now, and I'm also minoring in holistic health. I found out about Project Censored through Ken Burrows in one of our holistic health classes, and it was really a time in my life where two of my passions collided, and that's why I'm here, and that's exactly why Project Censored has captured me so much, because in studying journalism, I've realized and I've been overwhelmed by this crisis of fear-based news and reporting on things that simply they muffle what's actually happening and going on in the world. And that type of journalism certainly serves its purpose, and we need to know, you know, things that are going on, but there's a part that is not being told, and that's the part that has ensued my passion more than anything.
That's heartening to hear, and as we also say quite often at Project Censored, really, the next generation, it's the young people in our society that I believe strongly are the real drivers of change and are going to be able to provide some serious focal points for us, not just to tinker or reform the existing systems and institutions, but create and reimagine new ways of doing things. And in this case, for journalism, maybe citizen journalism, is new ways to communicate with society at large, not just about the challenges we face, but about reimagining the way that we exist and that we do things.
I certainly agree with that. It seems like this generation that we have of journalists up and coming kind of really get that. And we're talking about stories that really matter and are not so much based on, you know, the negativity going on in the world. We're seeking out things that people are doing that are creating shifts within communities. And it's very enlightening and great to be a part of.
Well, Brandy Maselli, you also have a couple of other stories that you were researching, and they do lean more toward the other type of journalistic angle that we've been talking about. And Ken Burrows had mentioned pointing out some serious gaffes, problems, more than gaffes, they're not mistakes. A lot of these kind of things are designed to work in a way that protects the establishment, the plutocracy, from true grassroots democracy movements. One of those, of course, is Google could rig the 2016 election. And voter fraud is given this big cachet in the corporate news media. But the real problem is actually election fraud, right? Not individuals posing as others, but systemic problems. And this story with Google is a pretty serious one. And there's another that actually dovetails on a theme we've done here at Project Censored for a long time, and that's the problems of COINTELPRO, government surveillance, and the use of technology to sort of stymie First Amendment rights. And there's another story. The FBI has a new plan to spy on high school students across the country, particularly targeting Muslims, particularly targeting people in this stereotype from the so-called war on terror. Brandi Maselli, do you want to talk a little bit about either of those stories and your research in them?
Sure. So each story, I think, is equally important. I'll touch briefly on both. Google could have possibly been rigging elections ever since it has begun, since their search algorithms control your news feeds. Google decides which web pages to include in search results. And so basically anything that you search, it's going to keep promoting. It's tailored to you and what you tend to search. And so moving into the top slots can mean a difference between a vote between Hillary or Bernie or even Hillary and Donald Trump. The second story that I wrote is how FBI wrote some new guidelines that instruct high school students to report fellow students who criticize government policies and Western corruption as potential future terrorists. The guidelines are so vague and so broad that it's hard to know exactly who they are talking about, but it's almost seemingly relevant that they're targeting Muslim students.
That's some serious dragnetting that is likely to have a chilling effect on freedom of speech among young people. I find that particularly disturbing because it's targeting younger people. In this case, let's be frank, we're talking about minors. We're talking about kids.
Indeed, the FBI guidelines blatantly say that high schools and other, you know, younger education are hotbeds for anarchist extremists. It's ridiculous. I think that even if we have Muslim students in America traveling to what the FBI would consider a suspicious country or practicing their religion in an open space, that is no reason that we should even be targeting them.
That might include critical thinking students inside of the Project Censored process. Because the term anarchism is grossly misused, and, you know, it implies bomb-throwing chaos and that sort of thing. But it's really democratic decision-making at the lowest possible level and critical thinking at the same time.
That's right.
And that's certainly what we do. So to have the FBI encouraging people inside of high schools to be looking for critical thinkers and people who might be questioning power.
Right, large corporations, government organizations, you know.
So my students were amazed when they saw that. They saw that in my class this semester, and we talked about it in Sociology of Power. They were impressed that you'd done this work.
And it's very important that you're doing this kind of story, and the independent journalists that write these stories, it's very important for students to be aware of all these alternative sources and have places to go and create their own sources of information, right, so that they can share those with their peers and so on. And certainly this kind of story, really, it's kind of the heart of Project Censored's mission to tell the news that doesn't make the news and sort of analyze why. And this is part of a long-standing tradition in American history, in particular, of stifling First Amendment rights, pejoratively labeling people with differing ideologies that challenge capitalism and establishment order and the plutocracy. It definitely reminds me of another person that was seen as an enemy of the state, Emma Goldman, who once said the most unpardonable sin in society is independence of thought. I'm a proud sinner in that regard, of this, perhaps the rest of us
all
in the room here. That's a very important thing. And I'm very heartened. I'm just heartened to see so many younger people doing this kind of research, doing this really important work, because this is lifelong work. Again, it's really heartening to see Ken Burroughs, your efforts, and the students you have at San Francisco State University really rising to the occasion and really charting the path of what they think is most significant and important. And I think that that really bodes well. We hear so many negative things in the corporate media about the millennial generation and so many negative stereotypes that are so off mark. And we have to remember the millennials are now the largest. They're larger than the baby boomers. So we ought to really be careful what assumptions we're making and what we are trying to ascribe or prescribe to these this entire generation of people. And perhaps we should start listening. Ken Burroughs?
Well, I think we are. At least I know we are in our classes. And yet often young people come in feeling there isn't much they can do about anything. So setting up some possibilities that they actually can step into something that's authentic and real. I mean, when they get real news and real information, all of a sudden they start thinking in ways that are truly critical and appropriate. And it's, we use the word empowering, but it's also very engaging amongst themselves, I think. In our classrooms and in our meetings together, certainly Project Censored, there's a lot of O's and ahs when people bring their news research. Really? That's really happening? Let me see that source. And there's a lot of back and forth about challenging, and appropriately so. So to be critical means to be, not accepting, but in fact having good thought and good social engagement go on. So to me, it's very much about building community. It's very lonely to try to solve these things on your own. In fact, it's not going to work. So to be in discussion collectively around these powerful ideas is very appropriate and engaging.
Brandy Maselli, last words from you here in this segment. What do you hope to do? This knowledge you're accumulating, these skill sets you're accumulating, I can see a trajectory for you, but let's hear from you.
Sure. Project Censored has more than inspired me to go out into the world of journalism and do really great things. Here at San Francisco State and Project Censored, we're expanding and we're working on creating a magazine of our stories that we submitted to Project Censored this year, which I'm really excited about. And in terms of career outlook, definitely hoping to promote some generative journalism in the world and hopefully create some shifts with writing.
Randy Maselli, thanks so much for joining us. Michael Todd from San Francisco State, thank you for joining us in this segment. We're talking about critical media literacy education. We're talking with Ken Burrows, Project Censored affiliate professor at San Francisco State University. And we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to hear from a couple more students about more of the stories that they're researching for this Censored 2017 cycle and the 40th anniversary for Project Censored that's coming up this fall, where students and Ken Burrows will be giving workshops and talking about this very important work. This is Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. We'll continue our conversation after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we're looking at critical media literacy education, and we're focusing on Project Censored affiliate professor Ken Burrows and his students at San Francisco State University, the stories they're researching and that they're contributing for the next Censored book cycle that Andy Lee Roth and I are working on. It's in celebration of the 40th anniversary of Project Censored. And we are joined by two additional students for this segment. We're going to hear from Daisy Iroka and Jillian Solomon about the work that they've been doing. And, of course, Ken Burrows is still with us in studio, and he will be chiming in about what's happening at SF State and what he hopes to have happen here with these stories. In fact, we're talking about contributing to the Global Critical Media Literacy Project site to have segments on all of these kinds of things, particularly the generative journalism material that Brandy Maselli brought up in the last segment. So we'll certainly be getting into that in this half hour. But let's go ahead and jump right in with you, Daisy Iroka. You were a student at San Francisco State University, now in graduate school. But tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in this project, and some of the stories that you're still researching.
I'm a holistic health minor at SF State, so that's how I got involved. I've been Ken's TA for like a year. I've known Ken for a while. So how I knew about Project Censored, I signed up to take his class for 2 units as a TA, and he said for the extra unit I had to do something else. So he mentioned Project Censored, and I was like, okay, I'm not a writer. I don't know if I could do it, but I just jumped into it anyway. And then I've just stuck with it, and I've loved it, and I was just like, okay, these are stories that I've never heard before, especially on mainstream media. So I was just like, oh, okay, this is a really interesting group and club, and the people in it too have been great and amazing and very thoughtful. So I just decided to continue with it. So this is my 2nd year within Project Censored.
And Daisy, perhaps just tell them what you'll be doing after you leave.
I actually start naturopathic medical school in the fall. I will be going to Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine in Tempe, Arizona.
Daisy, that's definitely interesting and makes a lot of sense given some of the stories that you have been researching and some that you've looked at. One of the stories is on falsified drug studies that led to millions of children receiving dangerous antidepressants. That's one of the stories. And, of course, couples with some of the other stories that have come from San Francisco State University this year, particularly the crisis in evidence-based medicine that talks about half or more of all medical research may be false. And that was from Stanford University. I mean, that's a very significant and serious story.
Actually, the primary source on that was the lead editor of Lancet.
Yes.
And he came out with that statement and said at least half the drug studies are suspect.
Pretty alarming, particularly looking at the structure and the architecture of Big Pharma and its impact on quote-unquote healthcare.
Well, and Lancet being the leading medical literature publisher in the world, it's quite startling to have the editor say such a thing.
It is. Yeah. And Daisy, you interested in naturopathic medicine, right? Taking a different path, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the stories that you were looking at? Tell us about them.
The story, I mean, they all said the same thing, but pretty much what it is that there was a study that was done called Study 329, where it said that these antidepressants with the drug paroxetine, also known as Paxil or Seroxat, was generally well tolerated by adolescents. But what they left out was the fact that there was a serious side effect, which included suicide or thoughts of suicide. So they found that 12 out of 93 children would have suicidal thoughts. And a possible reason for that would be the scientific research influenced by pharmaceutical companies in these clinical trials. So they found that pharmaceutical companies were 22 times less likely to report negative statements about the drug compared to companies that were independently funded. And I guess that would increase it as well. I know in the crisis in evidence-based medicine, they talked about how evidence-based medicine is hijacked by commercial interest. And doctors use these research to inform or make their medical decisions, whether it's prescribing drugs to their patient or giving surgeries. So for them to go off of that, I know, has that kind of effect on what we take now today and just contributes to that increasingly misdiagnosis that's going on because of their role.
So certainly we're looking here at vested interest by major drug companies, and they do studies, but they leave out the negative side of it. Oh,
yeah.
By the way, kids might commit suicide, but it gets massively used, and they make big profit. So you're saying that we really should seriously look into this to a greater extent. That's certainly what the story said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you had another story. Tell us about that.
I did. I had a story called Tapping Our Social Nature for Health and Survival, and I was a co-researcher with another friend of mine named Dorsa. We're interns together. But pretty much it talks about our sense of belonging and how it's a basic need that we have. And how we're so disconnected because of technology and our commercially driven society. But I guess she talks about places that continue to break these disconnects. So places that have like community gardens and community schools where they incorporate academic institution as well as extracurricular activities. So just working with that. And I feel like I can resonate with that because I feel just growing up, you always want a place to belong and struggling with that, especially when you feel like you have to fit a certain bubble based on what society shows you and tells you and how other people are influenced by that. And then their influence, you know, is projected onto you.
So you're talking about health for people.
Yeah.
Social health, and essentially saying that electronic media or what they call social media now really isn't social.
Yeah.
Social is two people looking at each other, smiling, nodding their heads, like
yeah,
we're doing right now.
Exactly.
And getting positive feedback in that way. And that doesn't happen electronically.
No, it doesn't.
Well, or not very well.
And we're such a social species. I mean, millions of years of food gathering and collaboration around all sorts of things for survival. And we're very tribal as a species that we have, as Daisy was saying, we have a need to belong somewhere. And when that's missing, our health is impacted. And there are all sorts of studies. In fact, her story talks about a UCSF study with over 3,000 nurses all having breast cancer, and it found that those that went through cancer alone were four times more likely to die from the disease than those with 10 or more friends supporting their journey of change.
That's a significant story in its own right. And Ken Burroughs, given your focus, certainly on holistic health journalism and these types of issues, what else can you add to the sort of the collection of a Daisy stories? And especially you've mentioned the Lancet story as, mm-hmm. as being a significant problem, but maybe mm-hmm. counter to that, some other things that you've encountered or that you talk about in classes about these kinds of issues.
Well, it's a broad brush, a broad mm-hmm. question. It varies a lot. There's a complexity that's showing up now in our society, naturally, in this post-postmodern era. And to think holistically, holistic literacy, to develop the skill to really face the complexity of our moment, it's quite humbling. And science is doing its best to approach this, and that's showing up in physics in one place, which is usually the leading science where discoveries happen. And what happens in physics is because we realize our physical models are not holding. So it's happening at all levels of the food chain of human discovery right now. I'm not sure really where to start to even answer this, but this whole idea of thinking more holistically has become quite essential.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. certainly the conversations you have in your classes, and it's very obvious that the students you have carry that mm-hmm. through a lot of their research. You know, another story that's been making the rounds again recently from last year was medical malpractice being the third leading cause of death. And the CDC totals, they seem to be sitting on that. They don't seem to want to really be addressing that. But that also goes back to the Lancet report and the fact that this is profit-driven. This is not necessarily science-driven. It's almost scientism wrapped in capital. Comment on that challenge that we really face.
Well, with a profit-based model, I grew up in an era, and Peter and I both grew up in a time when it was socially pathological to want to make profit off of illness. Hospitals were named after saints, typically. People volunteered in them. It was a very different healthcare system. And now we're looking at something that is owned by big consortiums, and if they're not making enough profit, they'll close the hospital down. So we're not getting the preventive treatment we need. We're not getting the education we need. And we're certainly not getting complementary and alternative care in those systems. So there's a great struggle going on in these dialogues about how to improve not just health care, but our ways of staying healthy before we get sick in a system that might make us even sicker.
And even Ken Burroughs redefining and reimagining what that means mm-hmm. to be healthy and socially. And I know this has come up before, and this is now mm-hmm. here we are again. They mentioned the nurses and the cancer patients that were with groups were doing
right.
better. It's also the case we live in such a technologically driven society, and we have so much screen time. Right.
Yeah.
Rather
yeah,
than
yeah.
Facebook, not FaceTime. Right. And
we
don't have and this is radio. It's a conversation. Right. But I mean, we have people in this room. We have people talking and sharing about these stories. We can see each other. That does seem to make a difference.
A huge difference. And this is, again, where generative journalism could step in and start asking questions that would get us to think about possibilities and not just about what's not working. So this generation of possibilities is, I think, what the millennials is really beginning to approach is how do we look at a very different system here? And we need, therefore, a journalism that allows that to catalyze.
Well, Daisy, you're going into naturopathic medicine. Will you speak to that? What was driving you toward that model? And what do you have to say about what we're discussing here with Ken?
Long story short, my mom had breast cancer. It was the summer before I started at SF State. So I spent months with her in the hospital, and I was just kind of watching the patient care she was getting, and I didn't really appreciate it as much. And then after the fact she had passed, I saw the drug that they'd given her was recalled. And that's when I was like, oh, no. Because before I came in with the intention of going into the pharmaceutical company and all that. So just since then, that shied me away from that. And I think Ken came into my class the first semester I started and talked about holistic health. And I didn't know that things existed. So I checked out their library, the Learning Center. And I enjoyed the books, immunotherapy. I was especially drawn to the cancer sections given that time of my mom passing away. And I was just like, oh my gosh, there's other forms, to heal her that they don't really tell you while you're in the hospital or they don't let you know about. So I was like, okay, maybe somehow I could work with plants more versus mm-hmm. actual chemicals when it comes to healing people. So I spent one summer and was researching, and then naturopathic mm-hmm. medicine came up and I was like, huh. This is interesting. And then I looked at their principles in which they approach patients, and I really enjoyed that they were very educating in terms of educating their patients in their diseases and causes and how to deal with that. And it was very non-invasive, which is also what I appreciated, because I watched my mom get poked and prodded, and it wasn't fun for me to to see that. I didn't enjoy it. So that was disheartening. I don't want other people to have to go through that same thing too, which is my main reason for going into it, like a way to help others without hurting them in the process. So.
Well, Daisy, that's some serious trials and tribulations, you know, for such a young person to have to experience and endure. But clearly that wasn't lost on you. It's been a very driving force in who you are in the world and who you're going to be as you move forward. Thank you for sharing those stories with us.
Thank you.
Ken Burroughs, we want to also bring in another student, and we want to continue this conversation about the significance of critical media literacy, the work of the Project Censored Affiliate Group at San Francisco State University. I'd like to remind people that you're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Helf with Peter Phillips. We'll continue our conversation after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. On today's program, we've been looking at the importance of critical media literacy education. We've been focusing on the San Francisco State University affiliates of Project Censored, led by a faculty member, Ken Burroughs. We've been hearing from a lot of Ken's students today, and we're going to finalize this program with this segment with another student. Jillian Solomon joins us to talk about the stories that she's been researching for the Censored 2017 cycle. And Jillian Solomon, tell us a little bit about yourself and your path in education and how you got involved with the project.
I started at San Francisco State University in the fall. I recently changed my major to Environmental Studies, Social Justice, and I actually became involved with Project Censored through Ken Burroughs' class and was drawn to Project Censored because we research stories that aren't being shared in public media, and I found it important that we are able to share stories that are of much importance and everyone should be aware of and informed.
Then riffing off of that, why don't you tell us a little bit about a couple of the stories that you have been researching. The couple that we have here on the projectcensored.org site are We Must Speak Up, Capitalism is Eating Democracy. There's another story you have on India's solar plans that are actually being blocked by the World Trade Organization. So why don't you pick one of those and let's talk a little bit about the stories, your research, and your thoughts.
I'll start with the India's solar mission plan that was blocked by the World Trade Organization. I was interested in this story because I found it really interesting how current international trade rules limit our government's capacity to support local renewable energy, and it undermines our clean technologies for social betterment.
Well, certainly this is a World Trade Organization. This is a neoliberal kind of story, and the World Trade Organization is a big component of the movement toward globalization, right? And when we hear the word globalization, when we don't have political analysis and theory behind it, we hear, oh, we're all working together. We're all going to be a big, happy global village and family. And what it turns out globalization and neoliberal economics actually is it's not free trade. It's certainly not fair trade, but it's free trade in the sense that, well, those with money and capital are free to trade how they like against the sovereignty of other peoples. And in the case of India, this sounds like a story where there are plans in a very densely populated country to go to renewable energy, but yet the forces of global capitalism are saying, well, not so fast.
It's interesting, especially with India, I mean, looking from a colonization standpoint, they're just now trying to step up and come up. And it's interesting how the U.S. still has power over them and can come in and rule against it. India relies solely on burning of coal for their energy, which is detrimental for climate change. And it would be nice for them to pursue this solar mission, which would give renewable energy and build their economy by creating local jobs. This plan would have brought energy to millions of people, generating 100 gigawatts of solar energy annually by 2022. These trade agreements can create opportunities for American businesses and help growth in the U.S. economy. However, these developing countries are suffering the most from these trade agreements.
Yeah, this is certainly a very important story, and it's certainly not the only one of its type. This is happening in many places around the world, and the corporate news media in the U.S. are oft, let's just say that they engage in foot-dragging or stonewalling, huh? They don't really leap to cover these kind of stories. Ken Burroughs, can we bring you back in a little bit? Do you oversee some of the research of these stories? What's your take on this kind of a story?
Well, this has a lot to do with trade agreements. The WTO was active, in, along with the United States, in blocking this. And around the world, if we were to create a kind of journalistic system that would track this in an honest way, we'd be really exploring with good critical thought, is this kind of trade really in our benefit? It certainly is not in the benefit of slowing down global warming if countries were trying to do something really right as far as a national plan and something to empower their cities and their workers, and it's blocked because of a synthetic trade agreement.
Indeed. There was a BBC report about this, and it was also in the Huffington Post. Again, but these kinds of stories don't seem to get right. They don't seem to get the big coverage because of the corporate media's connection and shareholder connection to the big banks and the global economy.
Right. And her second story, I think, is even more clear about why that is. Would you like to mention a little bit about that? And I'm glad to speak to it as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, Jillian, please tell us about that. One of the other stories you did, which actually has a quite catchy title, We Must Speak Up, Capitalism is Eating Democracy. And that's something that's been a recurring theme and certainly critics of that system for a long time. Tell us a little bit about that, Jillian.
I was inspired by Yanis Varoufakis. I was diving deep into his interviews about how we must reclaim our democracy and how capitalism...
The finance minister from Greece, for listeners that don't know, right?
Yes.
Who spoke here not long ago. But please tell us more about your diving into this.
What caught my interest was how our capitalist society is run. Mostly I'm speaking on behalf of monopoly capitalism and how a very small percentage of wealth have the power over policies and can influence our government. It's quite interesting to see how these economic and political spheres have been separated at the start of our country, and now you're starting to see it in more of the economic sphere, and we need to reclaim our government back to a democracy to speak for the people's behalf and our social needs and interests, not only capitalism, to benefit all of us. We're starting to see a huge inequality between the wealth and the poor, and capitalism is a big influential part in this. The rise in unemployment is a global consequence of this economic growth.
So you're saying that private capital, so concentrated in the world that less than 1% owns well over half, hundreds of trillions of dollars, actually, and that they will stop or block creative things like solar panels in India. And we had a story earlier about synthetic diesel fuel from air and water, which I can't imagine the petroleum companies are going to do anything but try to prevent from happening on any sort of large scale. So these are things that are vital for people to understand and know, I would imagine.
It's really important to just be educated in what's going on and what's really pushing these policies.
Jillian, what attracted you to this story? I mean, what attracted you to reading about the Greek finance minister? I mean, I'm actually fascinated about what piqued your interest about going into that route. I mean, that doesn't seem like leisurely reading, right?
even for
a lot of college students, right? What attracted you to that? I mean, granted, you know, it says here in this piece, we have it posted, by the way, at projectcensor.org, We Must Speak Up, Capitalism is Eating Democracy. says capitalism without democratic oversight can become a very uncivilized system, brutish, destructive. It threatens the global economy and environment. Certainly, we've done scores of stories on those issues, you know, over the years. But tell us a little bit about that. A, what kind of drew you to the story? And B, back to generative journalism and Ken Burroughs and what Brandi Miceli was talking about. What do you think we can do about some of these things that are going on that you're learning about?
What drew me to this story was how capitalism is affecting all areas of our life. Being an environmental studies major, social justice, I start to see a trend on how capitalism can be looked at as the underlying root cause to a lot of our issues in terms of job loss, suffering. We see it with cutting of government spending, and it's just harder for people to get by. Healthcare is more expensive, and it's as if you don't have the money, then you don't have the opportunities that someone else does with wealth. It's interesting to see how capitalism can work and to look into different routes that we could take to make capitalism work with social needs and not just for a small percentage of people who can benefit. We also have to look at people who are not benefiting and take that into consideration, considering that there's a higher percentage of people who are not benefiting from the system.
Indeed. And, you know, upwards of half the population of the globe, you know, certainly living in varying degrees of poverty, even in the United States, which is commonly overlooked. We have these mythic perceptions of how people are doing. But, you know, upwards of 30-40% of people are hand to mouth in the United States. And people don't seem to get much of a voice. They're certainly not being represented by the Hillary Clintons and Donald Trumps of the world in the U.S.
Well, not only this mountain of debt that you're talking about for the poor, but this mountain of idle profit for the wealthy. And his point, I think, in this article, and she's done a very good job writing up the story, it's very well done, this that the investment from the wealthy is not returning. The cycle is not being completed. So it's not being returned to the culture right now. The instability of this moment is growing, and people can see the debt mounting.
What we've seen from the Panama Papers even very recently.
So they're putting it offshore and, you know, stepping out of taxes and everything else. And they're not really responsibly investing back into community. And so this cycle, her article points out very well. I have a wonderful line here. The result is low wages and unemployment for more than a quarter of 25 to 54-year-olds in America, Japan, and Europe. They're out of work. And consequently, the aggregate demand, the cycle that reinforces investment is reversed, and so culture is being highly impacted. And green technologies that could be highly financed right now are not happening, in part because of this cycle of lack of investment and unemployment everywhere.
And it's a growing trend.
The concentration of capital, and we're really talking about $100 trillion, is managed by these big BlackRock and Barclays, these big money management banks and firms that are looking for 7-8% return on investment for their investors. And these are the hundreds of thousands of millionaires and billionaires are putting their money in these concentrated places. It's primarily speculative. So they're looking for areas where home values are going up or land prices or water shortages. It's entirely speculative, and it's not regenerative in the sense of building giant plants to create synthetic diesel fuel.
And they're holding back from investments that are somewhat risky and they're really needed. So
that speculation is driving us so far ahead that it's inevitably going to be the bubble that will burst and capitalism will collapse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's inevitable in that sense. Many people are writing about this.
Jillian, you want to jump back in here?
I just want to say that an observation is that capitalism is very wasteful. With it being in the hands of such a small percentage, it encourages them to fly private jets and create more of a carbon imprint. It's really important to look at it in a different perspective, not just with self-absorbed needs and how you can come up and make more, and not really taking into consideration other people who don't even have food or have food rationing in other underdeveloped countries.
Or other species, or the ecosystem.
It affects everything.
Yeah, so capitalism in many ways is so antithetical to a lot of our natural systems here. I mean, we're dealing with ocean acidification. In 15 years, we might have some mass suffocation in the Pacific Ocean. The coral reef is largely bleached. These are the challenges that millennials are really going to face. I mean, we're going to face it too. And the older generation of people are going to, you know, they're still part of that system, mm-hmm, right? And mm-hmm. there really is, again, I want to go back to where we started with this, and not just mm-hmm. a generative journalism idea, but reimagining mm-hmm. these types of systems, right?
And how they can work.
Yes.
Well, he's a wonderful man to do that because he's both a libertarian and a Marxist. He's a really interesting guy.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. the anarcho-syndicalist yeah. elements, yeah, the right-left
so
paradigm.
He's quite interesting that way. And he's suggesting that the problem is not just capitalism, it's unfettered capitalism. Mm-hmm. We really don't have a democracy that's balancing out the dark side of capitalism.
And Robert Reich has a recent book talking about this. Certainly Ralph Nader has talked mm-hmm. about this for years in mm-hmm. one of his recent books on transcending the right-left paradigm. Mm-hmm. Very important way of sort of, again, reimagining, rethinking, mm-hmm. retooling, and just restarting a lot of these things instead of reforming, mm-hmm. right, where we inherit so many of mm-hmm. the built-in flaws. In many cases, that needs to be deconstructed. We need to start anew. And
with
I think
a clean slate.
Yeah. I think so. And I think what's so exciting about a lot of this is with this kind of critical media literacy kind of project, with a lot of the project-centered stories, mm-hmm. is that we get to hear mm-hmm. from young people. We get to hear your creativity, your ideas, what you think is important, and what you're doing about it, mm-hmm. right? Not just what you're talking about in Ken's mm-hmm. class, mm-hmm. Yeah. but what you're going to do about it. And you're an environmental
studies
major.
Social justice.
So what do you see yourself – that's a great connection. So yeah. what do you see yourself doing with this?
I see myself – my inner self is an activist, self-proclaimed. I try to take anything I can into my own hands and sign petitions and be politically active and also get my friends involved. I feel like us millennials really need to start stepping up to the plate and start caring about things that actually matter and affect us directly or indirectly. We all are connected, and if it's not directly affecting us now, it most definitely inevitably will.
Well, that is certainly well put. And the stories, of course, that we have heard today, Ken Burroughs, from your students have once again been quite remarkable. Ken Burroughs, we're going to wrap up this segment here. Mm-hmm. We have a minute left. Can you just mm-hmm. give us maybe some concluding thoughts on your part?
Well, it's great to be here. I'm pleased to be behind the mic again. It's a rare challenge to really organize thoughts. I'm appreciating what you do here on the radio program, just stepping up the mic again. It's a noble effort, and just to hold this community conversation and deepen it is a great thing, I hope, for the listeners as well.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being here and the efforts at San Francisco State University. Jillian, Daisy, thank you so much for coming in and joining us along with Michael and Brandy. We've had a great session here, and we're very delighted that you came on and shared this information.
Yeah,
you can learn more at projectcensored.org. We'll certainly be updating these stories.
Conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came.
That does it for the Project Censored show today on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest. Our engineer is Erica Bridgman. The Project Censored show airs on 35 stations around the U.S. from Maui to New York. Archives can be found online at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. And also, tune in to what's happening in Washington, D.C. Later on in the month of May, where we'll be participating, Project Censored will be, in Ralph Nader's Breaking Through Power, breakingthroughpower.org, where we're actually going to be addressing a lot of these issues. So we invite you to find out more about that. With that, we'll see you next time.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, skies, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by taxes while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the ties for the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.